The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "The Business of Books." New bookstores are opening across the Triangle as an industry threatened by online sales opens a new chapter of prosperity. And this article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, "This chapter reads like success. Bookstores are blooming in the Triangle as an industry once hammered by online competition flourishes." And this is written by Kate Tracy. It's a sunny spring Sunday in Durham, and 9th Street is buzzing with pedestrians and shoppers. A couple passes by the Regulator Bookshop, a literary mainstay celebrating its 50th anniversary next year. Its shelves teem with classics, biographies, new fiction, poetry, and more. "This place is awesome," the man tells his companion. "What is it?" she asks. "A bookstore," he replies. "It's one of the few that are still around." Well, not exactly. The Regulator's longevity is nothing to snuff at, but the notion that bookstores are a relic of the past could not be further from the truth, especially in the Triangle. Bookstores are popping up all over, and longtime booksellers express optimism for the future. It appears that against all odds, Amazon, it's never been a better time to be in the business of books. In fact, 200 independent bookstores opened in 2023 alone, according to the American Booksellers Association. The growing population of smart, educated residents in the Triangle, many of them ardent lovers of books, is helping drive independent bookstore success. In fact, on April 26, customers lined up in droves at Raleigh's Blackbird Books and Coffee to celebrate National Independent Booksellers Day and bought a record 500 books from the store. The bookstores are a reflection of the ethos of the Triangle because people come here to work, they come here to learn, and they come here to be in community, local author J. Dana Trent said. Bookstores have stepped up to meet the needs of Triangle residents. Blackbird opened in 2023. The fantasy-themed Wildflower Cottage bookstore opened in April in downtown Anger. Bayo's Books and Brews is expanding its cafe and bookstore to a second location in Raleigh. And owner Jim Raineri dreams of it having 10 locations in Triangle towns. Daughter's Coffee and Books opened in April near Research Triangle Park. Fable Books and Cafe is opening this summer at 219 Raleigh Street in Holly Springs. Monkey Cat Books recently opened in Sanford. Nirmalis Cologne and Deanna Kalk are opening Fable Books and Cafe in June in a two-story house on Main Street in Holly Springs. In Garner, Books A Million is taking over a former Party City location. On the national front, Barnes & Noble has announced it's opening 60 stores across the country this year. Despite the growth, not all bookstores are successful. An example is the closure of Rofhiwa Book Cafe in Durham, which opened in May 2021. Linda Marie Barrett, the executive director of the Southern Independent Booksellers Alliance of Asheville, said the organization has grown its membership by 20% every year since 2020. Keeb Fitch, who has owned McIntyre's Books in Farrington Village since 1989, said, "I think that bookstores are reflective of their communities, and they're just the soul of a community." Triangle Business Journal took a closer look at how four different bookstores, some of them legacy stores in the area, continue to thrive despite constant change and challenges. Quail Ridge Books. Trent, a Raleigh resident and Wake Tech professor, published her first book in 2013. Her latest, a 2024 Penguin Random House memoir called Between Two Trailers, charts her volatile upbringing as a preschool drug dealer in rural Indiana under the care of mentally ill parents. When she hosted a book launch at Quail Ridge Books last April, the event sold out with more than 200 attendees. "I'll be in a parking lot somewhere and someone will stop their vehicle, roll down the window and say, 'You're Dana Trent. Your book made me cry,'" she said. She has had a firsthand look at how in-tune Triangle bookstores are with the literary desires of their customers. "These independent bookstores here, especially Quail Ridge, know that they're not operating in a vacuum, and so they're keen to listen to readers and what they want," she said. Would Trent be a successful author without the support of local bookstores? "Absolutely not. There's no way," she said, "because in 2013, it was the local bookstores who gave me a shot." Lisa Poole bought Quail Ridge Books in 2013 and moved it to its current 9,000-square-foot location in North Hills in 2016 after Kane Realty Corporation wooed her to the space. The store has no plans to leave. "This is where we want to stay," Poole said. Quail Ridge's inventory is substantial, with a heavy emphasis on Southern literature and literary fiction. The store hosts regular author events and even rents out the McKimmon Center at NC State University for big authors, drawing as many as 1,500 people. Events bring in a substantial amount of Quail Ridge's revenue, Poole said. She thinks about adding a food or beverage component all the time, she says. However, Quail Ridge has a non-compete clause with the neighboring Starbucks in its lease, so coffee is out of the question. The shop's sales decreased by 25% in 2020, but bounced back by the summer of 2021. Quail Ridge employs 25 full-time and part-time employees. Quail Ridge's sales in 2019 were approximately $3 million, with the store increasing about 2.2% annually, for the most part. Sales were down during the pandemic, but thanks to expansion of its online shipping capabilities, the store was able to weather the pandemic. Amazon is Quail Ridge's number one competitor, Poole said, but when Barnes & Noble opened in Village District in 2021, she was nervous at first, but not anymore. "I don't think the traffic they get is the same as ours. Plus, we do have very loyal customers that come to us, so I'm not concerned," Poole said. Alleyway Bookstore. Along with her husband, Jen Otepka owns Alleyway Bookstore in Apex and a video production company next door. The used bookstore is less than 900 square feet, but after a year and a half in business, it's already punching above its weight. Instead of cash, Alleyway Bookstore offers credit to book donors. Except for the store's local author section, most of the store's books are trade-ins. Kids' books range in price from $3.50 to $5.50, while adult books range from $5.50 to $10.50. The store's downtown location at 116 North Salem Street brings plenty of shoppers and restaurant goers, as well as children and teenagers stopping by after school. The couple recently extended their lease another 2 years based on the bookstore's success and profitability thus far. "We wanted to sell 20 books a day, and we definitely achieved that at least every day. So our goals are being met, and we're pretty happy about it," Otepka said. While downtown Apex means more foot traffic, the location is not without its own challenges. "The biggest obstacle right now is just dealing with parking and the overall aspect of how the downtown is transitioning with trying to expand and create more parking," Otepka said. Page 158 Books. Have a conversation with Suzanne Lucy, owner of Page 158 Books in Wake Forest, and she'll be quick to rattle off the health benefits of reading a real book. Reading for 10 minutes is the same as doing a yoga class, she'll say. Reading increases empathy. It may decrease the risks of Alzheimer's disease. If you don't like reading, it's because you haven't found the right book. When Lucy decided to become a bookstore owner, her father told her she was crazy. In July, Lucy will celebrate the 10th anniversary of Page 158 Books, whose name comes from its original location at 158 South White Street. She now employs 16 people and says she's only had one bad customer in those 10 years. Lucy owns her own real estate at 415 South Brook Street and even expanded in 2023 to a total of 4,800 square feet. During the pandemic, business was booming for Page 158. "Two of us were delivering 3 hours each a night, so it was really busy because our community is just so wonderful," Lucy said. Each year, the business grows by 7%, bringing in just under $1 million in 2024 revenue. She and her husband also started New Kids on the Books, a nonprofit that provides books for children in need. "I spend a lot of time on catalogs and TikTok and all of that, trying to constantly figure out what the big next book is," Lucy said. The store deals with low margins to supplement. Page 158 hosts regular events and sells beer, wine, and other retail items like puzzles, stickers, and T-shirts. Lucy estimates that 25 to 30% of sales comes from these additional sources outside of books. A sign in Page 158 book says that every time someone mentions Amazon inside a local business owner loses their wings. But there are more challenges than just Amazon. Credit card fees and transactions are becoming a real challenge. Many wholesalers that Page 158 uses to buy retail items don't take credit cards anymore, which makes cash flow more difficult. Plus, credit card fees have increased. "If we make 4% on books, 4% is going to the credit card, so that really is hard," she said. Publishers have really started raising book prices because of tariffs on paper and paper imported from Canada. Lucy went to Washington, D.C. this spring to talk with North Carolina senators about the situation, and one North Carolina senator told her that the economy will level out in 2 to 3 years. That's not realistic for a lot of small businesses, she said. I think we'll be okay because we have a good customer base that's very loyal to us, but I can't guarantee that. If they're up against food, which is astronomically priced, or a book, I don't think they're going to buy the book. McIntyre's Books. McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh has seen double-digit growth every year for the past 4 years, a welcome reward for many of its veteran staff members. Event-wise, we're just killing it, lead book buyer Pete Mock said. Last year was probably our best year ever in terms of events, just all year long, just great authors, great crowds, good sales. Mock and owner Keith Fitch are experiencing the explosive growth in Chatham County firsthand. There'll be times when I'm working here on a Saturday with Pete, and I'll just turn and look at him, and I'm like, who are these people? Where have they come from? Fitch said. It goes both ways, as McIntyre's has played its own role in the growth. People come here all the time and tell us, I bought my house because of this bookstore being here, Fitch said. Mock reads between 175 to 200 books a year, and that's not even counting the books he does not finish. My whole life is book selling. I don't have a social life anymore, and I don't mind. I like sitting at home. I like sitting on my porch. I like sitting down with a really good book, and then I like coming in, and I like talking Keeb's ear off, Mock said. He knows his customers well enough that he orders specific books to cater to their tastes, but that's all changing as new residents arrive. The variety of titles that I can bring in now are much greater than I did before, just because there's a greater audience for them, which I like because it helps add to the breadth of our stock, he said. And we get people in here all the time who will come out with stacks of stuff and go, this is the best selection of stock I think I've ever seen. Fitch's father, 91-year-old R.B. Fitch, developed Farrington starting in 1974. McIntyre pays a fixed percentage of sales every month that stayed the same since it opened. Volatilities in the market could spell trouble for McIntyre's, but for now, business remains strong. We've been very fortunate to have had a great rebound after COVID, and we're going to happily ride that sucker as long as we can, Fitch said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Major change as Morgan leaves WRAL. Beloved personality will anchor final WRAL newscast on May 21. Deborah Morgan's final broadcast at WRAL, scheduled for May 21, marks the end of an era for the station and the last link to an anchor desk that had a stunning run in the market. And her time on the anchor desk, the most coveted of television jobs, speaks to her versatility as a journalist and her respect in the newsroom. Morgan, David Crabtree, meteorologist Greg Fischel, and sports anchor Tom Suter had a long and dominant run, serving together from 1993 to 2008. While the Triangle has had some longtime anchors, Charlie Gaddy of WRAL, Larry Stogner at ABC 11, for example, keeping an anchor team together for 15 years is rare in the local news business. Suter joined the WRAL sports team in 1971, became the sports anchor in 1981, and held that role until 2008. Fischel started at WRAL in 1981, moved to chief meteorologist in 1989, and left in 2019. Morgan joined the station in 1993, and Crabtree served as the lead anchor from 1994 to 2022. Television has had its share of prima donnas, but Morgan was never that. She was more than willing to hustle into the field and grab a story or serve in the many community events that ask local broadcasters for help. She always listened closely in news meetings, was fully prepared when the cameras came on, and could pivot with aplomb when the live news demanded flexibility. While it's surprising that her WRAL career is ending, it's a tribute to her talent that she enjoyed such a long tenure. And her departure sets in motion a closely watched battle for one of the market's premier jobs, and in a market that continues to be more competitive. German Bank continues Triangle push. A German bank is continuing to add people to its Cary technology hub. Only 2 years ago, Deutsche Bank had 900 people, a number that has now reached 1,100. And now the bank plans to add another 100 employees. Managing Director Eben Scanlon said the firm's commitment to upfit several of its existing floors at Center Greenway off Weston Parkway is really cementing our firm position in Cary and the Research Triangle Park. The site serves as a tech hub for Deutsche Bank, delivering software to both its U.S. and global operations. Epic CEO gets a seat at the table in Saudi Arabia. Epic Games CEO Tim Sweeney was among those listed as attendees at President Donald Trump's lunch in Saudi Arabia. The White House released a list of 32 business leaders who were attending, and it included Elon Musk, Arvind Krishna of IBM, and Sweeney. Sweeney had posted on X in January, "After years of pretending to be Democrats, big tech leaders are now pretending to be Republicans in hopes of currying favor with the new administration." Inside the Beltline sees prices rise. The hottest housing market in Raleigh and across the Triangle is also the most expensive. The 27608 zip code covering the Five Points in Hayes-Barton area is the highest ranked zip code in the region on the Business Journal's latest list of hottest housing markets in the country. The ranking spotlight where activity is surging, prices are dramatically rising, or homes are selling at a faster pace. In the first quarter, the 27608 zip had 56 new listings and 32 listings sold with an average sale price of $1,428,445. But notably, the average days on market for sold listings was 111. The number two market in the Rougemont area, straddling Durham and Person counties, 27572, it had just 18 new listings and 11 listings sold in Q1, but the average price at $477,772. And finally, DHHS eyes move to Blue Ridge Home in late 2025. West Raleigh is having a moment as the Carolina Hurricanes battle through the National Hockey League playoffs, and the surging area of town is going to have another win soon. Dr. Devduta Sangvi, the secretary for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, told Biz the department's goal is to move to its new headquarters on Blue Ridge Road in November. The new home in the 10-story building features 480,000 square feet of office space. The building on Dix Parks accommodate 2,600 DHHS employees who work various on-campus hybrid and remote shifts. It's a big deal all around, as that means many more workers looking for amenities along the Blue Ridge Corridor, and it clears the path for the future evolution of Dix Park. And now we turn to the top stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Kaylee Thompson, "Luxury Homes Planned for Northeast Raleigh." Blue Willow Homes plans homes that will start at $2 million with big lots. Northeast Raleigh is getting a new community where the homes will start at $2 million, sitting on 78 acres just outside of Interstate 540 and bordered by the Neuse River and Harris Creek west of Forestville Road. Granite Ridge will have seven 10-acre lots. It's the first custom home community in Raleigh for Blue Willow Homes, which has other communities in Durham, Hillsboro, and the Wendell area. It won't be far from the new Publix-anchored shopping center at the intersection of Buffalo and Forestville Roads. That shopping center will also have a Chipotle, Dunkin', and McDonald's. LaQuesta Bryant, broker at LPT Realty and listing agent for Granite Ridge, said Blue Willow president Todd Eschenbaugh had been looking to build a custom home community in Raleigh. "It's such a great place for people that are wanting those bigger spaces as well as having that luxury home. Instead of having to be in North Hills or downtown Raleigh where all of the homes are on top of each other and having to pay $1.5, $2 million, you're able to drive up northeast a little bit and still be in Raleigh, easy access to Wake Forest and Rollsville, as well as a quick commute to downtown Raleigh and have that country feel with no HOA," Bryant said. Raleigh has seen a rapid rise in the market for luxury custom homes. The total number of luxury home sales, over $1 million, grew by almost two-thirds, 64%, from March to March 2021 to 2022 through March to March 2024 to 2025. Sales are already underway, and one lot is under contract for about $2.5 million. It will be the Ennis floor plan that features five bedrooms, a two-story foyer, spiral staircase, library elevator, and that's two separate library and an elevator, and a primary suite with dressing area. One spec home will be built while the remaining six will be custom. Lenovo's journey enters new era in the Triangle. Analysts believe Lenovo is well-positioned to handle trade uncertainties, and this is written by Lauren Onasorge. The deal that brought Lenovo to the Triangle happened 20 years ago, an acquisition that would change everything for thousands of employees in the region. It was May 2005, and the phone call started coming in from large corporations like Coca-Cola and major banks, recalls Tom Looney, the IBM-turned-Lenovo executive who took many of those inquiries. Companies for decades had been getting their ThinkPad PCs from a long-trusted American brand, IBM, which headquartered the laptop business in Research Triangle Park. But suddenly, IBM was selling off that division to a little-known player from China, known today as Lenovo. Customers were in a tailspin. "You want us to trust you?" Looney remembers clients asking incredulously. But despite challenges, including anti-China sentiment, Lenovo would grow to become a major electronics maker. Analysts said that thanks to tough decisions made two decades ago, Lenovo is better off than many of its peers when it comes to its ability to push through the present environment. Looney remembers being excited about what was coming. "We were in a bad place at IBM," he said. "IBM didn't want to be in that business anymore." In 2009, a former CEO, Wanding Yang, then chairman of Lenovo's board, gave up that role to take on the CEO seat again. And that's when the company started to gain traction, Looney said. Yang focused on three things: revenue, profit, and market share, and Looney had to deliver, which he did by surrounding himself with like-minded leaders. Rob Enderle, an analyst with Enderle Group, said the variability of tariffs makes it difficult now, but that Lenovo is in better shape than most with its distributed footprint and strong presence in the U.S. and China. "They're really the only true multinational company that we've got where they have leadership located all over the world," Enderle said. "It gives them a lot more flexibility." Durham biotech Humacyte slashes jobs to save cash. This is written by Zach Ezone. A biotechnology company in Durham is cutting jobs to conserve cash. Humacyte plans to cut about 31 employees, defer new hiring plans, and reduce other expenses. The company announced the cuts May 13 when releasing its first quarter earnings. The move comes amid a stock slump for the firm, which has seen its share price fall 67% this year, closing at $1.73 on May 13. The company has been working to advance the launch of Symvess, which the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved in December after a months-long delay. The cuts are expected to save more than $50 million over the 2 years. Humacyte had 220 employees at the end of last year. The actions come after a New York Times article published March 24 said the FDA approved Symvess despite warnings. Humacyte CEO Laura Nicholson has called the criticisms of Symvess ill-informed and without merit. Symvess is made from bioengineered human tissue and can be an arterial replacement and repair for those with serious injuries like from a gunshot or car accident. NC State grad to launch Hillsborough Street restaurant. This is written by Kate Tracy. Yusef Saeed wears many hats in Raleigh. He's the chief financial officer of the local Jasmine and Olives Mediterranean restaurant chain and the founder of a luxury home renovation company. His latest venture with his wife Serene involves bowls, acai bowls to be exact. The couple plans to open Purple Spoon Acai in July at 3801 Hillsborough Street in a 1,600 square foot space by the Brick House Bar and Grill near the NC State University campus. As an NC State alum, Saeed knew the area and wanted to bring something fresh to the former Ben & Jerry's ice cream shop, which closed last year. "This is the perfect spot for acai and juices to go there, especially for the students, giving them a healthier alternative to ice cream and your regular burgers and pizza," he said. Purple Spoon will source its acai berries from the Brazilian Amazon and will add fruit, nuts, and other toppings to the pure acai soft serve mixture. "The style of acai we're doing is completely different and originates actually from Australia," Saeed said. Next year, he envisions opening three more locations in the area. Jasmine and Olives has six locations in the Triangle, including two on Hillsborough Street. "My whole thing when opening near college campuses, just like Jasmine at NC State, we always want to be affordable and we don't want to overcharge for simple things," he said. He said the budget for opening a Purple Spoon is between $150,000 and $350,000, depending on the build-out needs of a particular location. For the Hillsborough Street location, he's funding the build-out through existing capital and did not take out a loan. Country Club sues city over townhomes plan, Raleigh developer wants to build 16 units near the Donald Ross course that dates to 1948. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. The city of Raleigh and a developer are facing a lawsuit over missing middle zoning rules. The Raleigh Country Club filed a lawsuit in Wake County Superior Court against the city and Raleigh businessman Mark Thompson on May 8th. The lawsuit is over an approved 16-unit cottage court project at 2501 Pool Road, which backs up to the golf course. Raleigh Country Club is asking the court to make the city's frequent transit ordinance, or FTO, and site plan approval invalid and void. The lawsuit seeks to strike down the city's FTO and halt the townhome project. It argues that the FTO is essentially a rezoning of the property, but without allowing for a public hearing. This has been a sticking point for opponents of the missing middle rules, the city having the authority to approve these higher density developments without community input. According to city records, the developer has started the application process for infrastructure permits. The city approved Thompson's project on May 2024 based on missing middle zoning rules the council approved in 2021 and 2022. The frequent transit development option allows more than 12 units when 20% of the residents meet affordable housing standards and are along a frequent transit route. Raleigh doesn't actually have frequent transit. What we have is a theoretical map and a BRT line, New Bern Avenue, said Christian Anastasiadis, chief operating officer of McConnell Golf and Raleigh Country Club, referring to the city's bus rapid transit project. And so we're using non-existent transit as the justification to push high-density developments into single-family neighborhoods, including the King Charles area, which has had protective zoning in place for nearly 20 years. Thompson declined to comment on the lawsuit. The city attorney's office did not respond to a request for comment. The 2.15-acre property is zoned Residential 4, one of the zoning designations that allows for increased density under missing middle rules without going through a rezoning and public hearing. Raleigh Country Club certainly didn't ask for 16 units crammed next to a tournament fairway without a single word of consultation, Anastasiadis said. In a similar case in Hayes-Barton, Wake County Superior Court Judge Brian Collins last year issued a remand order reversing the Raleigh Board of Adjustment's decision to approve the townhome development led by Concept 8 of Apex. However, the developer was given a chance to refile with a new plan, which it did in March. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. First, we have Technology and Innovation, written by Lauren Onasorge. North Carolina just missed on Anduril. High-tech defense firm picked Ohio despite intense effort by North Carolina officials. North Carolina was ready to offer more than $300 million worth of incentives for drone manufacturer Anduril to build a manufacturing facility in the state. But the project went to Ohio, which offered more than $450 million worth of incentives. North Carolina economic development officials pitched 10 sites to Anduril, referred to as a Project Thor in internal documents. But in the end, the defense startup pledged to create 4,000 jobs in Ohio, becoming the largest project in that state's history. Hundreds of pages of newly released documents provided by the North Carolina Department of Commerce show what happened. The records Anduril zeroed in on Rowan County last year, but competition was fierce. Support for incentives is vital for project success, a project briefing states. Anduril wanted to begin operations in July of this year. The California company, which had recently received a $1.5 billion round of funding, wanted to create more than 4,000 jobs and secure a 400-acre site capable of creating autonomous vehicles for the military. Rowan County upped its incentives. Typically, the county offers five-year incentives equal to 50% of the new taxes paid on real and personal property. But recognizing this project's potential impact, it upped the ante to a 10-year grant at 70%, worth an estimated $21.2 million. Kannapolis planned to add in another $14.5 million as state and local incentives reached $316 million. In follow-up conversations, it was clear officials thought Anduril's high-stakes visit in September went well, but late last year, the talks appear to have fizzled. The Ohio factory is projected to generate an additional 4,500 jobs among suppliers, services, and indirect employment. from Ohio, Anderil was to receive a job creation tax credit and $70 million from the All Ohio Future Fund, subject to approval. The 30-year job creation tax credit from Ohio is reportedly valued at $452 million. Runway project at RDU faces rising costs. A $1 billion runway is about to be built at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. I don't see any scenario where you can't continue to go forward, Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority CEO Mike Langguth said. Without a new runway, RDU's West Coast and Transatlantic service is at risk. The new runway will stretch 10,639 feet and is on track to come online in June 2029. It will replace the current 10,000-foot runway, which is in constant need of repairs. In October 2023, officials said the new airstrip would cost $534 million to complete, but that price tag has nearly doubled. The capital project budget approved by RDU in March earmarks $1.1 billion for the new runway, a figure that includes $200 million to maintain the current one. About $119 million is expected to come from the federal government, or just 11% of the project's total budget. The airport typically gets $22 million a year from the state, a sum Langguth said is put toward the runway. The remainder may come down to bond financing. We've got the bonding capacity, Langguth said, noting that while RDU still has about $300 million in debt tied to Terminal 2, we'll take on this debt to pay for the runway, he said. Startup features new approach to ice cream. Durham entrepreneur Pierce Freelon didn't invent astronaut ice cream, but he did take freeze-dried ice cream vegan with his new startup, Coco Fro. It ends up being the texture of a cookie, but it kind of melts in your mouth, said Freelon, the son of late architect Phil Freelon. Freelon was introduced to the concept of space ice cream as a kid in Durham at the Museum of Life and Science. At the same museum as an adult, saw space ice cream in the gift shop. When he saw the ingredients list on the back, sugar and high fructose corn syrup, he thought, there has to be a better way. He and his wife, Katie, purchased an ice cream maker and started experimenting. A $25,000 Kickstarter campaign allowed the company to buy its own freeze-drying equipment. Sweetened with maple syrup and date sugar, the ice cream made its debut in January. We've sold thousands of bags already, Freelon said. And finally, rugby club seeks new home as highway comes. For decades, athletes flocked to a field off Pool Road in East Raleigh, but soon truckloads of pavement could cover the former home of the Raleigh Rugby Football Club. The nonprofit's facilities at 7417 Pool Road were sold to the state last year to make way for the Complete 540 project. The club rented other fields while seeking a new 40-acre site, but Raleigh Rugby is finding competition is fierce for land. Mark Hemingway, club chairman, estimated the club has looked at close to 50 pieces of property, he says, and with those parcels that are level enough to fit the bill, it's either been outbid or run into zoning issues. Hemingway describes it as being outmaneuvered in both due diligence and financial capabilities. And now we turn to real estate and development. This page written by Kaylee Thompson. Office leases boost Centennial Campus. Flurry of leasing activity at NC State reshapes the tenant landscape. Recent leasing activity at NC State University Centennial Campus has led to one of its buildings being fully occupied. More than 240,000 square feet of leases were signed at Alliance Center, which is now fully leased, and Venture Center. Owner and building manager Lincoln Property Company completed the leases over the past 4 months. There are very few opportunities anywhere in the country where organizations can have a physical presence on the campus of a Tier 1 research university. That is a key differentiating factor for Centennial Campus in the post-pandemic age of remote and hybrid work, said David Connor, Senior Vice President at Lincoln. Lincoln Property Company of Dallas has a commercial real estate presence in the Carolinas with a hub in Charlotte. At the five-story Alliance Center, Hitachi Energy USA renewed its existing lease and expanded its space to fully occupy the 147,000-square-foot building. Previously, it was using 100,000 square feet. It will complete its move into the expanded space later this year. Two companies are moving from the Alliance Center and into the five-building Venture Center. NC State's Institute for Advanced Analytics will take 20,000 square feet at Venture 3 in second quarter 2025. Linxon will be in 16,000 square feet in Venture 1 in the third quarter. Also, LexisNexis will be relocating from 1801 Varsity Drive, signing a 65,000 square foot lease for office space in Venture 3. It will move in the fourth quarter. This puts the Venture Center at about 70% occupancy. The five Venture buildings total 475,000 square feet of office, lab, and classroom space. In 2021, Lincoln was selected as the developer of an innovation district at Centennial Campus. The 30-acre project will start with a six-story building that will have 327,520 square feet of life sciences and office space. Rejected rezoning in Raleigh gets new life. A real estate group is trying to again have a downtown Raleigh property zone for high-rise development. Raleigh Development Company, led by local entrepreneurs Don Carter and Bobby Lewis, has filed its second rezoning application for an assemblage of nine properties on West P Street. In 2023, the developer had its first rezoning request denied by the city council. But in February, the council voted to waive the two-year waiting period for a new rezoning application. The rezoning still seeks 30 stories but limits height on certain properties. The current allowed height is 12 stories. The zoning would change from industrial mixed use to downtown mixed use. The height still concerns residents, especially those living in the historic Glenwood, Brooklyn neighborhood nearby. A row of industrial buildings separates the neighborhood and site. Raleigh Neighbors United opposes the rezoning, saying it violates city plans and policies. The new zoning would limit height to 240 feet on 804 and 818 West P Street, northern portion of the site, and 360 feet for the remaining parcels. If the average height of a single story is 12 feet, that would translate to 20 stories and 30 stories, respectively. Baltimore firm launches mixed-use project. A Baltimore developer has broken ground on its first development in North Carolina, despite the headwinds facing commercial real estate construction. St. John Properties has started site work on Wake Forest Exchange, a mixed-use business park covering 30 acres. The commercial real estate development will have more than 175,000 square feet of industrial, medical office, and retail space off Capitol Boulevard, south of the Wakefield Commons Shopping Center. Dustin Atkielski, regional partner with St. John, said the company is looking to fill a gap in the area because of the lack of product for businesses in need of industrial or flex space. The first of six buildings will be a 60,240 square foot spec flex and research and development facility. Along with that, a 11,112 square foot retail building will be constructed. The other buildings will be two flex and R&D buildings, a medical office building, and another retail building. And finally, Chicago company to build new industrial park. A Chicago real estate company has entered the North Carolina market with plans for a $70 million industrial park. Stoughton Industrial, that's S-T-O-T-A-N, has acquired just under 40 acres in Fuquay-Varina for $8.6 million, according to Wake County deed records. The company bought the property located east of Highway 55, just north of town, with plans to develop a park aimed at warehouse distribution. Stoughton plans three buildings totaling 487,000 square feet. The developer has conditional site plan approval from the town. Once it has received official approval and a grading permit, it will begin site work. The first building will be 221,760 square feet, the second 150,360 square feet, and the last 114,263 square feet. And now we turn to healthcare and life sciences. This page written by Zach Ezone. Holly Springs gets another big win. North Carolina's life sciences sector continues to attract major investments. North Carolina on May 12 secured another major life sciences investment, adding to a string of high-profile announcements that could result in thousands of jobs. Genentech, a subsidiary of Swiss multinational healthcare company Roche Holdings AG, announced plans to invest $700 million in a new manufacturing facility in Holly Springs. This is one of the first major projects this year to be confirmed for North Carolina, which last year announced more than $10 billion worth of life sciences commitments. Many of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies in recent months have announced plans to invest heavily in manufacturing in the U.S., but after record levels of announcements in 2024, the pace of confirmed projects in North Carolina has slowed this year. The North Carolina Biotechnology Center has been in talks with numerous companies for the past 6 to 8 months, said NC Biotech CEO Doug Edgton. However, some organizations are taking their time to make decisions. "This is a reaction to what's going on globally," Edgton said. "There is an interest, and people are not pulling the trigger quite as fast because they're waiting to see what happens," regarding the Trump administration's tariff policy. Edgton said the state could see investments in the $5 billion to $7 billion range in 2025. Prior to Genentech, the largest biomanufacturing deal in North Carolina so far this year did not involve a company building its own facility. The drug maker Regeneron Pharmaceuticals in April signed a 10-year manufacturing supply agreement valued at $3 billion to produce medicines at Fujifilm Diosynth's massive Holly Springs facility. NC Biotech is seeing interest from companies that would be new to the state and those already operating in North Carolina. Both Merck and Amgen have recently opened new manufacturing facilities and confirmed plans for further expansion. CEO exits multi-billion dollar company. The CEO of a public company based in Durham is stepping down amid a dramatic drop in the firm's stock price. Thomas Pike is leaving Fortrea, the LabCorp spinoff he's led since its formation in 2023. The company's stock price has fallen about 80%. Fortrea formed as the result of Burlington's LabCorp spinning off its clinical development business. It operates as a contract research organization that supports drug developers. Pike entered an employee agreement with LabCorp in January 2023, months before Fortrea became a standalone entity. This agreement covered a roughly 3-year term, ending on December 31, 2025, according to filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Pike, during a recent earnings call, said he and the board of directors agreed it was time for a change. "I'm proud of the team and all that we have accomplished to navigate through the challenges before and since the spin and position the company for future success," Pike said. "However, the financial results and stock performance are not what any of us wanted." Pike previously served as CEO of Quintiles Transnational Holdings before the company's merger with IMS Health in 2016 led to the formation of ICVIA. Peter Neupert will replace Pike as interim CEO. Home health firm grows from 300 to 6,000 clients. A healthcare company based in Morrisville is expanding its reach across multiple states through acquisitions and partnerships. AmiVie, spelled AmiVie, which recently rebranded from community-based care, provides in-home healthcare services to various groups, including people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, veterans with disabilities, and senior adults. It has grown from serving 300 clients in 2015 to about 6,000. The company, founded in 2015, has about a dozen employees at its Morrisville headquarters. It operates in 6 states with around 6,000 employees. In North Carolina, it has between 2,200 to 2,500 employees. The rapid growth has come through a combination of partnering with local providers and mergers and acquisitions, said CEO Mike Kotzen. "The way that it has worked in every state is we find one or a couple of good anchor providers, and then from that, we've expanded," Kotzen said. These acquisitions typically involve family-owned businesses that are facing different pressures and requiring further investments. For example, investing in new technology, like electronic health record systems, can be costly. Mardis Capital, a private equity firm focused on healthcare, has been the company's main investor since 2021. Kotzen said the company is focused on continuing to grow in the states where it is already operating. In North Carolina, it is growing between 5 and 10%. Each year. And finally on this page, we have a big number, $124 million. That's the total for tax-exempt revenue bonds for construction costs that the NC Medical Care Commission can issue on behalf of Duke Health for a new Cary facility. And now we turn to the Greater Triangle page, written by Ben Tobin. Nursing home sells for $24 million. New Jersey buyer snags Smithfield Nursing Home that dates to 1974. Smithfield has attracted an out-of-state investor for a medical facility, an increasingly common trend in the region. Smithfield NSF Realty, a Delaware-based LLC, purchased the Smithfield Manor Nursing and Rehab Facility at 902 Berkshire Road in Smithfield for close to $24 million late last month, according to Johnston County deed records. The nursing home first opened its doors in 1974, according to online property records and local media reports. It's unclear who the owner of the LLC is. The deed filing says that Smithfield SNF Realty is tied to a buyer in Lakewood, New Jersey. The address is a suite from an office building, but multiple entities appear to share the address. Johnston County, with its population racing toward 250,000, is no stranger to attracting major investments in the commercial real estate space. Look no further than Target deciding to place its first store in the county at a massive Eastfield Crossing development in Selma. But the sales of medical real estate seem to far transcend just Johnston County. In the past few months, Triangle Business Journal has reported on several medical facilities changing hands for major price tags, including Meadows and Oley, a Georgia-based commercial real estate firm, purchased the land for a future Novant Health outpatient surgery center in Leland in Brunswick County. Yad Healthcare, based out of New Jersey, purchased two rehab centers in Clayton and Wilson for a combined roughly $38 million. A California investor spent millions on a dialysis center in the Wayne County city of Goldsboro. Johnston County has continued to surge in population and investment interest. The county had just 169,000 people in 2010, but now has roared past 240,000. The county has benefited from its close proximity to Wake County and from the fact that land is cheaper than in Wake. Goldsboro wins 330 job investment. Goldsboro is getting a large economic investment. Prolec GE, that's spelled P-R-O-L-E-C, and then GE, a company that manufactures power transformers, is planning to expand its operations in Wayne County by adding 330 jobs as part of a $140 million investment. The project was unveiled May 14. Economic development officials had referred to it as Project Bull. The plans call for a new facility next to the company's current one off Highway 117 south of Goldsboro. The company said salaries for the new jobs will average about $72,000. Prolec GE is in line for millions worth of local and state incentives as part of the expansion. The Wayne County Board of Commissioners is set to vote on an incentives package for the project later this month. The Goldsboro plant used to be part of Charlotte's SPX Corporation, which sold its Transformer Solutions business to Prolec in 2021. Prolec GE has other U.S. operations in Wisconsin and Louisiana, as well as business units in Mexico and Brazil. It's a joint venture between Zignux of Mexico and GE Vernova of Massachusetts. Last year, it completed a $34 million expansion of its facility in Shreveport, Louisiana, that the company said would create more than 150 new jobs there. New 7-Eleven hits market for $7 million. A new convenience store and gas station from a national chain is on the market in Greenville, where commercial investments have been picking up pace. The 7-Eleven at 3436 South Memorial Drive, which opened in the fall of 2024, is listed for just shy of $7.4 million, according to marketing materials for the property. David Hopp and Ben Olmsted of Atlantic Retail of Boston are listed as contacts for the property. Hopp and Olmsted did not respond to requests for comments. This new construction, 4,793 square foot asset, has been leased to 7-Eleven for 15 years and is an outparcel to a top performing shopping center that is anchored by Academy Sports and Hobby Lobby. A flyer for the listing reads, "The property is part of the Greenville Crossing retail plaza on the south side of the city. The current owner is an LLC tied to Florida's RKM Development Corporation, which purchased the 1.2 acre site for $3.9 million in 2015, according to Pitt County deed records. And finally, Wayne County attracts money from West Coast. A California-based investor has paid millions for a medical facility in Wayne County. McKinley Riggs, a Gold River, California-based LLC that lists Chris Pigman as a member in Secretary of State filings, paid $3.23 million late last month to acquire the DaVita Dialysis Center at 2609 Hospital Road in Goldsboro, according to Wayne County deed records. The property is near the UNC Health Wayne Hospital. Pigman, per his LinkedIn profile, is president and CEO of the Pigman Companies, an innovator and leader in the field of commercial real estate development, it says. The building is 11,000 square feet on 1.5 acres, per property records. The property sold to a collection of buyers in 2021 for $1.28 million, per deed records. And now we turn to the retail and restaurants page, written by Kate Tracy. Bathhouse takes Raleigh plunge. Asheville's Sauna House is expanding near Kane's West End development. Bathhouse culture is coming to Raleigh. This fall, James Grogan and his wife, Katie Brotherton, are opening a sauna house in an 8,500-square-foot space at 324 DuPont Circle by Kane Realty's West End development. Grogan has been working on the project for more than a year and signed the lease a couple of months ago. He liked the idea of being neighbors with Bolted Bread and near Kane Realty's platform building in the Warehouse District, south of the train tracks, where Homebody Yoga and the Bike Library are tenants. It's just a nice neighborhood. We're excited about the community that's there, and it is growing. And the building worked out really well for us from a spatial perspective and architecturally, Grogan said. Sauna House, founded in Asheville, has been in expansion mode with locations in Durham in December and Charlotte in January. Other spots include Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Texas. Grogan described Raleigh's location as a modern Nordic bathhouse. The routine, 15 minutes in the sauna and 3 minutes in the cold plunge, comes with health benefits such as muscle recovery, improved circulation, detoxification, and more. The street-facing part will have locker rooms, changing rooms, and showers. The bathhouse will also have 2 large saunas, one for socializing and one for quiet reflection, as well as 2 large cold plunges. Sauna House will employ 10 to 20 people. Grogan hopes to expand to other areas of Raleigh in the future. Americans are quite skittish or afraid of bathing culture in general, and Sauna House has made it really clean and affordable and approachable, he said. We're seeing a lot of these pop up, and I think in a lot of ways people really want to find ways to disconnect, and Sauna House is a great space for that. Downtown Cary adds a new fitness studio. After 6 years in Raleigh, Alicia Bell is bringing her trampoline and core workout classes to downtown Raleigh. The owner of Fitness Studio Mega, located at 2330 Bale Street near Raleigh's Costco store, plans to open this fall in a 2,700-square-foot space at the Meridian East Chatham development at 229 East Chatham Street. Downtown Cary is popping, Bell said. There's so much going on down there, but it's also an area that I think is a little underserved with fitness. Bell started thinking about expanding 2 years ago. The studio joins Juice and Mocktail Bar, the Refreshery, as a tenant at Meridian East Chatham, a mixed-use development with more than 200 residential units. Other new retailers in downtown Cary include the boutiques Littles of Cary and Villa 19. Christian Coffee with Lee and Associates represented Mega in the lease transaction. This is the spot to be, Bell said. Mega offers 3 different types of fitness classes. Mega Former classes mimic the Legree method. Mega is a licensee of the Legree method, where students work through slow resistance training movements. The new Cary studio licenses the Legree method and will have 10 Mega Former machines, which cost approximately $9,000 each. Popular beauty store to open in North Hills. North Hills is adding a big name in beauty products. Sephora plans to take over 2 suites in the North Hills Main District by the Regal Movie Theater, according to documents submitted to the City of Raleigh. The suites were formerly occupied by Natural Body Spa and Shop and Women's Boutique, Copper Penny, which moved to the Village District last year. Sephora already has triangle locations at Crabtree Valley Mall, Village District, Briar Creek, the streets at South Point, and Fenton. The French luxury conglomerate LVMH acquired Sephora, which has 2,700 stores, in 1997. Other newcomers to the main district include Aloe Yoga and women's boutique Everett. Kane Realty Corporation has been pushing for more luxury brands amid the redevelopment of the main district. Chanel Fragrance and Beauty is leasing space at 4361 Lassiter at North Hills Avenue. RH Gallery opened its upscale furniture galleria and rooftop restaurant last fall. And finally, Dessert Shop to open in Hot Raleigh Corridor. The Midtown Corridor by Raleigh's Costco and Wegmans stores is becoming a hot spot for out-of-state chains. Andy's Frozen Custard, headquartered in Springfield, Missouri, is under construction at 340 East Six Forks Road. The building will be 1,650 square feet with 22 parking spaces. Instead of indoor dining space, the custard spot will have an outdoor patio with an order and pickup window area, according to site plans filed with the city. John and Carol Kuntz founded the dessert business in 1986, naming it after their son Andy. Today, the company has more than 170 locations in 15 states, with more on the way, according to Andy's website. The dessert shop has 8 locations in North Carolina. And the final reporter page is on the coast, written by Dane Huffman. Dare County budget proposes no property tax hike. The county manager for Dare County is proposing a new budget that's a 4.4% increase but doesn't raise property taxes despite a huge jump in home values. County Manager Bobby Outen proposed a budget of $242.9 million for 2025 to 2026 at a meeting May 5th. What's fascinating is property in the county increased to a tax base of $27.3 billion, up from $17.7 billion after the new property valuations. But the tax rate is dropping from 40.05 cents to 26.32 cents. And with our remaining seconds, Novant breaks ground on Coastal Surgery Center. Novant Health is looking to expand its presence in North Carolina's booming coastal region. The health system based in Charlotte broke ground recently on a 16,000-square-foot outpatient surgery center in fast-growing Leland in Brunswick County. The building will be located at 9151 Ocean Highway East and is slated to open in 2026. Once complete, our new center will secure much-needed access for surgeries and procedures that's close to home for Brunswick County residents. Heather King Semple, president of the Novant Health Brunswick Medical Center, said in a statement. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.